This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We'll hear from Matt Williams, the veteran morning show host on WAFB Channel 9, also the Crime Stoppers reporter. Matt will comment on the record number of homicides in our parish for 2018. Also, the special session, the 7th and 29 months, starts Monday. What is going on at the state capitol? We'll also get Billy Nungesser's take on the special session. The lieutenant governor will comment on the budget implications if the fiscal cliff becomes a reality. We're now 15 days away from that prospect. Billy Nungesser also will comment on Senator John Kennedy's call for Governor John Bel Edwards to resign. And Alan Gannett on his book, The Creative Curve, How to Develop the Right Idea at the Right Time. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on WRKF. Your numbers are 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. Elsewhere, 877-217-5757. And you can send an email to talk at talklouisiana.org. Later in the hour, we'll hear from Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, but we start with Matt Williams, the ubiquitous reporter and anchor. For many years, he has been on WAFB, about 15 of them, I think actually 15 years as of July 1st. Am I correct, Matt Williams?
I think that's right. Good morning, Jim. Yeah, it has been a while. I'd have to go back and, I don't know, I'll run up to Human Resources and get the day. But yeah, it has been about that long. How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's always good to work with Matt Williams, who gets up very early. Well, in fact, he not only gets up early, he arrives early for work. Was that you at 2 o'clock this morning on Government Street, Matt Williams?
It might have been. Depends on what you saw. But you know what? I do. I mean, I'll get in here early. It is right about 2 o'clock. But I think I've said it before. You know, when I walk in here, there's typically already, you know, three, sometimes four people already here working on the show. It's a huge show, and it's takes a lot of folks, so it's a pretty good crew.
But some have the impression that the anchor just shows up right before showtime and says, give me the script.
I don't know. Maybe back in the day, I guess it happened. It's never happened with this show or any of the crew here. You know, we're on the air now for 3.5 hours, it's a 3.5-hour show beginning at 4:30, and we run until 8 o'clock. Live on the air, and it's just a lot to do, and so everybody's got to play their role, and the role for all of us is writing and as much as you can, editing as much as you can, and obviously with social media now these days, there's the, you know, and digital and web content, and so there's a lot to do. I mean, everybody's job has changed a little bit in the business.
And Matt does it all. He not only reports, anchors, he shoots, he edits, he writes. He is I would say a triple threat, but I think that's a quintuple threat for Matt Williams, who for 15 years now has graced the airwaves in Baton Rouge. And this week is a somber one at WAFB because it is the week that Donna Britt, 37 years at WAFB, decided to call it a career amid her fight with ALS. She is quite a lady.
She's incredible. There are words that escape me to do her justice. You talk about her being an absolute pillar of the station. She's a pillar of the community, and like you said, has been for almost 40 years. I watched that entire newscast through tears, and then, you know, the Facebook live after that, when everybody was able to come back and kind of show that love to Donna. I mean, I mentioned it in a post a while back. You know, I have been here for about 15 years, and when I came in as one of the new reporters, I made mistakes. Look, I still make mistakes. But I knew that when I made those mistakes that George and Donna were going to be there with that security blanket to make it okay. We're going to give you the opportunity, the time you need to learn and get all this stuff right. Look, we'll make it okay. We've got your back. We've got you. And Donna was just... she was so genuine. If you've met her out there and about, and I know many people have because she volunteers literally everywhere. If you've met her, then you know her. That's exactly who she is. There's nothing fake about her. You see her on TV. There's no reporter or anchor playing here. This is exactly who she is. She's incredible. And to say that that we're never going to be the same is exactly right. These hallways are going to be forever different. It's our hope that she's able to come back over here whenever she wants and visit. And the deep hope is, though, that she gets to spend a lot more time with family right now as she continues to fight ALS. It's absolutely horrible. We know what it does to people, and we're seeing what it's done to Donna. But she is, man, she's putting up a heck of a fight, and everybody's certainly thinking about her and praying for her.
Yes, indeed. She'll be 60 years old next month. I recall she celebrated her 50th birthday here in the studio. And,
did she really?
Yeah, and George Sells brought flowers, and Matt, the flowers still had the price tag on it.
Did they really?
They did. But
that's George?
That's George Sells.
That's absolutely right. Thank you, George. You know what? That is the perfect example of George as well. And those two together, my gosh. You talk about a team. What a combo. Really set the stage and turned WAFB into the powerhouse. And not just setting the foundation, but raising the pillars as well. What a duo. And it's nice that they are still both around and want to be a part.
I remember Cheryl Michelet, who was one of their producers.
Yes, absolutely.
She'd worked at other places, and so when she was hired at 9, her first day at WAFB, as she's producing the news for George and Donna, she writes the script and says, "Here's your script." And they said, "No. We write the script.
We're doing it. We're going to do this for you. Thanks." Oh yeah, I know Cheryl actually pretty well. I mean, her husband actually still works over here, and I worked here for a good time while Cheryl was here. But that's exactly who George and Donna were, and certainly what Donna always was. She wanted to be as hands on as she could with any single story, and she took them all. She took them all very, personal, and she brought that to every newscast.
And on a serious note, we're talking about a serious malady for Donna Britt, but Matt Williams is the Crime Stoppers reporter, and yesterday we heard from the DA, Hiller Moore, who spent most of the hour with us, and he is quite open in the fact that we're headed for another record year, surpassing last year's record for homicides. The latest in the parish was a young woman killed Wednesday night in a shooting on College Drive, walking on the sidewalk near the Bienville Towers apartments. 20-year-old Dedawn Bush fatally shot about 9 p.m. at the intersection of College and Bardwell after a man approached her, and according to people who heard the shot, 6 shots fired. Matt, what are we going to do about this? We keep talking about it.
Is there something more expensive than a $1 million question? I guess there certainly could be. But we talk about this all the time. And, one of the that story already is worrisome enough. One of the things that makes it even more worrisome is police right now wondering if this is just a completely random shooting. Some person just walked up on her and shot her for no reason at all other than to just do it. We talk a lot about how do we stop this, and there's a few endeavors going on right now trying to get, for instance, dads to get more involved with their children at home. It starts. It begins and ends there. I don't have the knowledge about what goes on in everybody's home. I wouldn't presume to know what goes on in everybody's home. I only know, what goes on in mine. And so the involvement of the parents is absolutely critical here. We can't expect these children to raise themselves, and that's essentially what's going on without a lot of the supervision and the parental involvement. And the answer is I don't know beyond that. They were talking with the Baton Rouge Area Chamber just made a donation, so to speak, yesterday to groups like Hiller Moore, the Sheriff's Office, and the Police Department for the shot spotter cameras. We don't have enough of those in the parish. Those enable law enforcement to kind of pinpoint a bit better where those shots come from. They can get out there and investigate those shootings a bit quicker. But the thing is, the shots are still happening. And so stopping them from happening in the beginning, you can throw all the money you want at this technology to find the shooting. What are we doing to stop the shooting from happening? That's the key. And I really do think, like so many other folks, it begins and ends in the home. We got to do much more.
And I recall a day a few years back when you were on this show, and it was the day that we had the death just a few yards from the station in Beauregard Town.
Yeah.
And a person was arrested in that killing. But we generally, as I said to Hiller Moore yesterday, we pay a lot more attention when these deaths occur on the south side of Florida Boulevard.
That's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. What we try to, and that's very much part of what you'll see in social media. What we try to do, obviously, over here is make sure we don't do that. Every single shooting death, every single crime like that, wherever it is, deserves our full-throated attention. And so, you know, that's why, you know, look, I say it all the time, you know, the newscasts seem like they're filled with blood, smoke, and scandal. And look, I know that they are, a lot of them. But it is important to let folks know what is going on wherever it is happening. And it needs to be focused on, obviously, wherever it's happening. You just got to make sure that you're not giving one more attention than the other, because every one of these things needs to be solved. But again, you go back to, great, solve it, but how do we stop it from happening in the first place? That is, I guess, the million-dollar question.
877-217-5757 or 297-5633, talk at talklouisiana.org. That's how you can reach us as we spend another segment coming in short order with Matt Williams, and then it's Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser. But Matt is a person who's not only on the air 3.5 hours each morning, he is the Crime Stoppers reporter. And, oh, by the way, Matt, we're headed for another special session starting
Monday. Boy. Yes, we certainly are. It's going to be interesting. We'll see. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about that right now. We'll see what lawmakers decide they want to do. Better than $500 million, they got to figure out, or there's going to be cuts everywhere, certainly to higher ed and health care, those two that remain constitutionally unprotected. Beginning Monday, they're going to gavel in. Our Matt Houston, actually, is our Capitol correspondent. He's going to be up there gavel to gavel, but we'll have coverage of that, just not like I know you guys will, certainly, see if anything gets accomplished this time. Jim, you cover this all the time. You've been around the block. What do you think?
Well, we'll talk about it when we come back.
There
it's
it
a
is.
Mess. We'll see what happens, and we'll talk about it with Matt Williams after this time. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Williams, the intrepid anchor and reporter for WAFB Channel 9. He's on the air every morning starting at 4:30 Monday through Friday, and today was no exception, and your partner, Lauren Westbrook, was not with you. That makes it a little more challenging for you, Matt Williams.
It does, and obviously it's much easier and obviously much better when Lauren's by my side. And trust me, I know very well the viewers would much rather be listening and looking and working with Lauren than me. Everywhere I go, I always get asked. It's literally one of the first questions. Hey, where's Lauren? I don't know.
They think you travel everywhere together.
I don't know.
Yeah.
She's back on Monday, so we'll be side by side back at it again. But we miss her when she's gone. That's for sure.
And Matt was named a few years ago Father of the Year in Baton Rouge, and this is a big weekend for the Williams family, I'm sure.
You know what? Father's Day is always fun. I've got my folks are in town, actually, so I'm going to make sure I get over and see my dad and make sure the kids, obviously, see granddad as well. But it is not a lot of plans as far as my Father's Day, really. You know, I mean, just, you know, save a buck. It's going to be wet and rainy anyway, so plan B, just kind of hang out inside. And I was talking with Steve Caparata on the show this morning, and I said something to the fact of, hey, you know, just – I'll buy a steak. That'll be my Father's Day present. And then Steve went up to me. He said, well, you know, call me old-fashioned, but just I'd like to spend some more time with my family.
There you go.
And I'm like, oh, God, you can't do that to me, because now my steak's, you know, I still want my steak, though.
I'm sure you'll get a good steak. Matt Williams, who, you know, that the form you have, television is such a visual medium.
Sure.
You have to work at that. You don't eat too many steaks, I'm sure.
Well, it's some good protein every once in a while. Why not? But no, yeah, you kind of got to watch what you're eating. There's enough of my life is already unhealthy enough. The hours that we work, the lack of sleep, all that stuff. So, you know, I try to watch what I eat. I try to control what I can, because the hours are uncontrollable.
Well, you asked about the special session, which starts Monday, and I've been wrong before, but I can't imagine lawmakers leaving this session, the 7th and 29 months, empty-handed. But it's a partisan atmosphere, and of course, we're gearing up for a governor's election, which is now inside 16 months from the election day, October 12th of 2019. So there is that, and it seems, Matt, that Senator Kennedy is ramping up to run against Governor Edwards.
I don't think there's any doubt. You know, we talk about the number of seasons we have down here, from the fifth season to football season. The only one we're missing is spring. That thing, spring never shows up, but political season, always here. 24/7, 365 days a year. But the governor's race, which was always undercurrent being talked about, you're right, is heating up right now. I don't think there's any doubt that Senator Kennedy is going to get in on this race. Then you add another name like Jeff Landry in here. And so what is this going to look like? But the barbs continue. I mean, Senator Kennedy calling for the governor to step down. Man, he went from zero to the nuclear option real quick on an issue that's faced every governor of Louisiana since time immemorial, pretty much, budget issues. So I think he's laying, obviously, that groundwork for a return to the Bayou State. He would like that main job, it would seem.
Well, and Governor Edwards, who usually does not reply to these missives from his opponents, apparently John Kennedy got on his last nerve this time, and he asked Senator Kennedy how many bills he had passed in his 2 years. Yeah. So the gloves are coming off, and we could have a race every bit as fast and furious and ferocious as the David Vitter, John Bel Edwards race of 2015. So we shall see, and it'll be fun in some ways to watch and probably gruesome to watch at other times. But it'll be a typical Louisiana political race, and it will be a race, probably a very close one, Matt.
I think you're absolutely right. I think when you talk to the folks in the know, there's not a lot of blame from the populace right now being thrown at Governor Edwards for this stalemate with the House and the Senate. There's not a lot of blame being thrown at him right now for issues that go back before he became governor. This goes way back into the Bobby Jindal era, when that can continued to get kicked down the road and one-time money was used here and there. And we knew these budget problems were going to be there. And now, with everybody trying to solve them, I think people understand where the blame needs to be. So I think it will be a tight race. But again, this is a very red state when it comes to other leaders, elected leaders. Would Governor Edwards be able to win again if somebody like a John Kennedy were to run against him, or Jeff Landry, somebody not with the baggage of a David Vitter? I don't know, but I think you're right. It would be close.
Here's a note from a police officer. He says he's a police officer, Jay, saying that the Baton Rouge Police Force is operating with about the same number of personnel it did in the early 80s. So that we're talking almost 40 years. And that there's little wonder why the crime rate is going up, the homicide rate in particular, when there are fewer officers per capita and the officers in this parish are paid much less than they are in other parishes. He notes that there's been attrition, some of it going to neighboring Ascension Parish, where apparently the officers are paid better. So is that an issue that we're talking about the budget? Once again, issue that has relevance?
It's absolutely right. And I think I think part of his criticism of the pay in the police department, the lack of boots on the ground, there's a lot to stand on right there. That being said, what he would also probably tell you, and what every cop will tell you, what every deputy will tell you, is we can't be literally everywhere and stop all of these shootings. No matter how many places you put us, we're not going to be able to stop all of this. We need more, absolutely. And the pay needs to be competitive, absolutely. But it still falls on us to help them figure this out, or we're going to break another record in Baton Rouge.
Another listener, Holly, notes the residual impact from 2016. It's somewhat hard to believe it's not been longer, but it has been almost 2 years since Alton Sterling was killed, and then the police officers were killed shortly thereafter, and then we had the record flood, the 100 or 1,000-year experience. Matt Williams, are we still recovering as a people?
I know that we are, because I see it all the time. I've got people struggling with trying to rebuild their homes, and at the same time trying to rebuild a community, not so much from the water was damaging, but from the shootings and what it led to, what it meant, what it turned people into. The fact that the flood happened after and that people were able to come together and help one another, you saw that good in man. but there's still so much that we need to be able to cross paths on and literally walk in each other's shoes and get to know. And you see that more and more. You see the efforts being made in places and, you know, for instance, police and deputies going into the communities, getting out of the cars and walking literally these streets and holding the, you know, fairs and get-togethers and all that. But it's tough to trust if there's been, you know, issues in the past. And 2016 was obviously, to call it an issue is a disservice. We've still got a ways to go, but I think there are some people that are willing to do whatever it takes to make that change. I'm surrounded by a bunch of them who are willing to do whatever it takes to make that change. We got to do something, or it's going to be we're not seeing it get any better. There was another murder this morning, another murder. Check the 9 News app. There was another one. The guy died on the way to the hospital. He was found in his driveway. And so what is going on? What is happening right now?
All right. Where was this one?
Oh, let me open up the app again. This was over by Scotland Avenue, I believe. I got it right here.
Number 49.
I mean, this is...
For this year.
Yeah. And so the within Baton Rouge city limits last year, it was 89. 89 within the city limits of Baton Rouge last year. And now see, you know, where we are as far as the numbers. This is incredible. So this is a home on Davenport Avenue out near Thomas Road in Scotlandville Avenue, about 415. He was found in his driveway and died on the way to the hospital. So that is another one.
Well, Matt Williams, happy Father's Day. Happy 15th anniversary at WAFB. And this is a man who was born in Tulsa. Got his college degree, University of Wyoming. He was Reporter of the Year in New Mexico, and for the last 15 years, he has been a pillar of this community, and we're glad you're in Baton Rouge. Thank you, Matt.
Well, thank you, sir. Anytime. Talk with you soon.
That's a deal. And we're back after this timeout for the news on WRKF. Good morning. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing, and our guest is the Lieutenant Governor of our state, the Honorable William Billy Nungesser, who is a busy bee, as he usually is, and we're getting ready for a special session come Monday. And Billy Nungesser, we'll start there. You're saying that you may have to rely upon student workers if this fiscal cliff is not resolved.
Well, we're looking at every option of what happens in the worst case scenario. I've been meeting with the library, the museum groups, the state parks, and looking at all of our options of what we can do to keep everything open and operating under the worst-case scenario. You've got to do that and prepare for the worst.
A few weeks ago, you went to the University of Louisiana Lafayette, I believe, with Governor Edwards, and both of you conveyed the urgency of resolving this problem. And it kind of says something about the time. I know there were some people who didn't like you sharing the stage with a member of the rival party. Is that unfortunate?
It is. You know, listen, I'm never going to agree with everything the governor does or anyone else, but I do agree. I love Louisiana, and we need to fix this for the greater good of the people we represent. And I went there to talk about the incredible tourism numbers and the taxes that those tourists leave in Louisiana. But I wanted to make it clear that although tourism should be funded, it should never be ahead of education, health care, and fixing our roads. So if we don't come together and fix it, and tourism suffers as everything else will, that $1.8 billion in taxes that tourists left here last year will be an even greater hole to fill if those numbers go down. So the importance of tourism, but taking into content that we've got to fix this for all the other things that the government serves the people of Louisiana.
Well, earlier in the week, Senator Kennedy asked for Governor Edwards to step aside, quit his job, and turn the keys of the mansion over to you. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm flattered, but listen, he's the governor. The people of Louisiana elected him. We've got to fix this thing and move forward. I think there'll be plenty of time for campaigning after this special session and in through next year, when we all have to run for re-election and ask the people of Louisiana. So I'm flattered, but I got the best job in the world, the job that the people elected me to do. And we've still got a lot of work to do to get our state parks back in tip-top shape and really get people coming to use our state parks, our museums. And so I've got the job I want. I'm running for re-election, and I'm flattered that the senator thinks that much of me. And but I'm going to stay where I'm at right now.
877-217-5757 for Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser. Mike in Sherwood Forest. Hi, Mike. You're on the air with Governor Nungesser.
Yes, sir. I don't know what's so hard about this. It's obvious that Bubba Jindal gave away almost $2 billion in tax breaks to the rich and instituted a heavily regressive 10% sales tax. If you want to boost the economy and solve the problem, take that penny off and charge the difference to balance the budget to the rich. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Changes in the income tax have been met with resistance. So what options are there independent of a continuation of part of the sales tax?
Well, you know, I do agree. You know, we find out about a lot of these breaks and this money that we've given to lower business here and tax breaks after they're done. And the ones that fail miserably, we never hear about. We had some situations in Plaquemines Parish when I was parish president that never panned out. I'd like to see more transparency in when we lower these companies here. And besides talking about the jobs it create, what are we giving away to get those jobs? Much like the Harris contract that we won't get into today. But we got to make sure we're getting the best deal for Louisiana as a whole, not just to create 50, 200 jobs. At this late point in the game, changing some of those things going forward, I don't know if it gets us where we need to be quick enough. We go through every contract at state parks. We're saving thousands of dollars every month, finding better ways to do things, cheaper ways to do things. I think in the long run, doing that across every budget, we've got a lot of cuts that we can still make, but not this late in the game. We're going to have to come together, keeping some part of that penny, I believe, to get us over this hump. I just don't see any way out of that this late in the game. But I appreciate the call, and I agree a lot in what he's saying as far as the giveaways.
Dan downtown. Hi, Dan. You're on the air with Governor Nungesser.
Yeah, Governor, should the Republican legislators forego their pledge to Grover Norquist and the pressure from ATLA and their corporate donors and instead fund health care for the disabled, education for our future, and law enforcement against the criminal element?
All right. What about priorities?
I do believe that some people worry more about re-election and what it's going to do or who's going to be angry if they vote one way or the other. And we need to just do what's best for the people of Louisiana. And that's unfortunate. The end of the last special session, I couldn't understand why they didn't just do another vote. Why would they sit and run the clock out and now cost taxpayers another $60,000 a day for another session? To get up there and just filibuster to the end, I don't think benefited Louisiana for sure, and I don't know the motive behind that.
David in Shenandoah. Hi, David. You're on the air with Governor Nungesser.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor. My question
morning.
Is, what is your position on a constitutional convention taking place?
I think it's long overdue. But I think the fear on both sides of what might come out of it is going to keep it from happening. You know, a lot of times if you can sit down and put a plan together, maybe it's an A, B, and C of what could take place and get your hands around the fear factor of what might, you know, be careful what you ask for because you might get something worse than you have. But I think the discussion has to happen where what are we going to look for in a Constitution Convention? What are the things that are going to be on the table? And but I think it's long overdue. I think we've got to restructure this tax situation in Louisiana. So I do support it.
A couple of questions sent by email. One about sports betting. Is that something that you could live with?
You know, I when Mississippi got the casino gambling and we were a year behind them in the riverboats, right or wrong, whether you agree with gambling, they kind of took the luster out of it right off the bat. In light of it's going to be right next door there in Mississippi, and you'll be able to go to Mississippi this year for the Super Bowl and place bets, I think Louisiana will end up passing it next year, the year after. But there again, we'll be a couple years behind our neighbor in Mississippi, which when more people go to Las Vegas for the Super Bowl, it's more of a draw for big sporting events to where they can go place a bet in those cities than actually the event in the city it's in. So I think it's a positive for the tourism industry. Obviously, the vice of gambling has been debated. Does that money come out of the restaurants and other things to do in a city? And you've got to weigh that. But I think we missed the boat by not passing it this year and Mississippi passing it, because it will affect us in the short term of people wanting to go place bets going to Mississippi.
What about a seafood tax?
Well, I'm working with the shrimpers mainly, and I've tried this for 8 years as parish president in Plaquemines, and we never got any steam. We get a lot of promises out of Washington, but nothing happened. So what we're doing is we're showing the safety factor of this import. You know, 7 out of 10 loads were rejected for bacteria, antibiotics. And if you're eating Chinese shrimp that are loaded with antibiotics for 10 years, when you go to the doctor for antibiotics, they're not going to work as well. We inspect less than 10% of the seafood coming to this country. So I've got all the lieutenant governors coming to New Orleans in about 3 weeks, and they're going to eat some good Louisiana seafood, and I'm going to give them a package and ask them to help me push for an inspection fee of 5 to 10 cents on all imported seafood. A lot more will be rejected because more will be inspected, and hopefully that'll stabilize the price so our fishermen can make a decent living.
What's your temperature regarding the special session? Do you think that there will be some sort of a consensus, or will we once again have lawmakers leaving the Capitol empty-handed as far as any accomplishments?
I believe they'll give something to the governor between that third and half penny and do something with some of the tax breaks, and that's just from talking to some of the people that have a say in it. But I'm more I'm optimistic and hopeful, but I am doing a lot of praying, because I've seen things this year that I've never seen in Baton Rouge before, just by the attacks that I got for going to speak about tourism, I was, you know, they tweeted out and sent out that I was for higher taxes, which was untrue. And So I'm just disappointed in that kind of rhetoric, that you don't have to agree with everything everybody does. If you didn't agree with me going over there and speaking, that's fine. But don't start a rumor trail to try to hurt somebody with lies because of something they did. And unfortunately, there's a lot of punishing going on in Baton Rouge, and that shouldn't happen.
Well, Governor, it is always a pleasure to talk with Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, and we'll be calling again soon. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, my friend. Have a great day.
Take care. Billy Nungesser, of course, had a father who was quite a character, a fine man, the elder Billy Nungesser, now deceased, and I'm sure Billy will be thinking of him on Father's Day. We'll be back after this pause with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 15th day of June. We are 15 days away from the end of the fiscal year for the state of Louisiana. There is a special session beginning Monday, and it's the 7th special session in 29 months. And Governor John Bel Edwards, of course, is under fire from many in the Republican Party who would like to see a GOP governor, and there is an election October 12th of next year. Think about that, less than 16 months away from Election Day. And John Kennedy, the former state treasurer, former revenue secretary, he gives every indication that he will be running against Governor Edwards. David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on Talk Louisiana.
You know, the politics in Washington is not much different from Louisiana. The Republican House would not even introduce a bill that President Obama proposed to have a jobs program to help the horrible economy he inherited from the previous Republican administration. And in Louisiana, the Republicans are adamant about raising taxes, which I think is absolutely necessary. Actually, there's going to be a tax cut and a tax increase. The net effect would still be less taxes on the sales tax, and the Republicans are so obstinate, they only want to obstruct rather than govern.
Well, we're going to have a robust debate, David, at the state capitol in the next few days, and also it'll continue in Washington. Donald Trump, to put it in perspective, is still more than, he's less than halfway through his first term in office, and if recent polls are accurate, he's gaining ground and is more popular now than he was on Election Day in 2016 when he defeated Hillary Clinton. So I don't see any end in sight to the partisan nature of our politics, and there are some philosophical divisions as well that will permeate probably for the rest of our lives. 877-217-5757. We're joined now by Alan Gannett, the founder and CEO of TrackMaven, a marketing analytics firm. His clients include Microsoft, Marriott, Saks Fifth Avenue, Home Depot, Aetna, Honda, and GE. He's been on the 30 under 30 list for both Inc. and Forbes, and his book is The Creative Curve, How to Develop the Right Idea at the Right Time. And many of us believe that some people are just smarter than the rest of us, and that a lot of success is based on genius. Is that an accurate depiction of reality, or is that inaccurate, Alan Gannett?
So what you find is when you actually look at the science, we've been studying creativity for over 30 years across neuroscience, psychology, sociology, anthropology, and there's this consensus among academics that natural-born talent is at best overblown and probably a myth. Really what you see is that some people start very, very early, and maybe their parents push them or their families push them. And if you start a skill at 3, by the time you're 18, you've been doing it for 15 years, and there's a compounding advantage that other people, it's hard for them to actually get there. But it's not impossible. And when you look at studies around creative potential, what you find is that studies show us that we essentially all have the same creative potential, but yet only so few of us actually achieve creatively. And so what I'm really fascinated by is, why is there this gap? Why do so few people take that creative potential and turn it into creative achievement?
Is it essential to have those creative juices stimulated at a young age? You mentioned when somebody starts a process at 3, by the time they're 18, they have an immense advantage. And some people believe it's impossible to start as an adult in a new endeavor. What about the importance of starting something very young in life?
So I think it's fine to actually start something anytime. I think the reality is that so many of us, just when we're older, we don't think it's possible. I think there's a mindset problem. One of the people I talk about in the book is this really fascinating guy, this guy Jonathan Hardesty, who decided at the age of 22 he wanted to become a fine artist. He had never actually painted before. He had never done art before. And he proceeded to spend the next 13 years learning how to become a fine artist. And he's now a world-renowned teacher of art. He's this prolific painter. He's incredibly talented. And he's one of the few cases we have where, interestingly enough, he started posting online his drawings that he started doing the first day he actually started learning. He decided he was going to post something once a day. And so we actually have this amazing record of his talent development. And he goes from terrible to very good. And so what you realize is that our brain is actually much more adaptable than we think it is. There's this concept of neurogenesis, which is the idea that every day we generate thousands of new brain cells. And these brain cells actually go to the parts of our brain that are most active, and that's where they attach. That's where they sort of lock in. And so our brain is much more like a muscle. It's adaptable to the world around us, these things we're doing, how we're stimulating it. But since it's, you know, under our skin and we never see it, we sort of have this notion that our cognitive assets are fixed, and that's just not true.
You note that there are four laws of the creative curve. What are the four laws?
So in the book, what I did is the first half of the book is breaking down some of the mythologies around creative history and creative science, and I debunk some stories like the story of Mozart and J.K. Rowling and some of these. Then the second half of the book is I interviewed about 25 living creative greats. So these are everyone from billionaires like David Rubenstein to, you know, singer-songwriter duo Pasek and Paul, who did Dear Evan Hansen, La La Land, and The Greatest Showman, Alexis Ohanian, the founder of Reddit.
from these interviews, what I found is that there was these four recurring patterns, these four things they all did to actually enhance their creativity. And so the first one was consumption. So I explained how even though we think of creators as always doing, always very active, it turns out the best creators are also actually some of the biggest consumers of culture. I explain why that is. The second is that even though we talk a lot about originality and newness when it comes to creativity, the best creators are also highly engaged in imitation. They realize that a lot of the world, a lot of the culture, a lot of the creativity that we actually like is often a remix of things that have come from the past, right? The first Star Wars was a Western in space, and so I talk about that. The third law is that even though we think about creatives as these sort of solo geniuses, these people who, you know, go to a cabin in the woods and write their next great American coming-of-age novel, really what you find is that the successful creatives embed themselves in a social system. They have people around them, collaborators, mentors, promoters, all these different people, and they break down who those people are and how to get them. And the fourth and final law is that, you know, I think we have this notion that creativity is this linear thing for these people. They have a great idea, they execute on it, they're successful. The reality is you find that the best creators are highly, highly iterative. And it's not just that they are, you know, doing stuff over and over again and trying to get it right, but they're iterative in a way where they listen to their audience along the way. They're actually very feedback-driven. They're very data-driven. And so even though we think of creativity as an organic, linear process, the reality is actually much messier, but it's messy in a productive way because you're listening to your audience.
The book is The Creative Curve from our guest, Alan Gannett. A few more minutes with him. Phil in Jefferson Terrace has been waiting. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, the question is, what is the saying that they have a muse? I mean, some writers and artists say that they have a muse that inspires them. Is there something in being connected to, like, say, a greater consciousness that...
All right. What about a muse? Thank you, Phil.
So one of the things that we struggle with when it comes to creativity is people report that they have these flashes of genius, these aha moments when, you know, sometimes in their shower, they're on a run, and they seem magical, right? Because you have these great ideas. But just because it seems magical doesn't mean it is. We actually have been studying aha moments and sudden insight for decades. And what's really interesting is we actually know a lot about how it works. Basically, you have two forms of processing. You have logical processing and sudden insight. Your left hemisphere is where logical processing exists. This is like when you solve a math problem, for example. It's very step by step. And you're conscious of each step along the way. But your right hemisphere, when it processes information, it's more focused on connecting divergent ideas together. It's much more focused on you bring complex problems to fruition. But this type of processing happens to be subconscious. And it's only once this type of processing comes to an answer that it pops into consciousness. That's the aha. And we actually see that in MRI machines. When you put people in an MRI machine, you see that difference. And so it's not magic. It's just different.
You note that genius is sometimes based on timing, that if Paul McCartney had written yesterday in 1885, nobody may have cared about it, but obviously, McCartney is considered a genius for good reason, but he is also a beneficiary of his time.
So one of the things we tend to mess up when we talk about creativity is we confuse sort of technical skill or technical quality with whether or not it's going to be recognized as creative. And those are actually two different things, right? For something to be recognized as creative, we all have to agree it's creative. We all have to look at it and say, oh, this is interesting. And that's a social construct. There's a social phenomenon. And so one of the big differences you see between aspiring creatives and successful creatives is that aspiring creatives don't realize that so much about creativity is not about creating for yourself. It's about creating for the audience. So you actually find that the really successful creatives are much more comfortable with the idea that they're creating for an end consumer in mind. They have to create something that's actually going to be wanted, that people will be interested in. Otherwise, you're just creating for the wind.
The book is The Creative Curve, How to Develop the Right Idea at the Right Time. It's a fascinating read from Alan Gannett. Some interesting pages here, including, you'll have to read the book, but think of the most prominent person named Lisa in your life or in the world at large. You'll find out more if you read The Creative Curve. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
We'll be back Monday. Same time, same place. And stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.